Hello, friends. This is the second hour of Out of This World Radio International with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it'll be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. We are currently the fastest-growing psychic and metaphysical radio program in the world, and now we have listeners in over 60 different countries on all the world's continents. Before I introduce my guest, Shirley Andrews, to talk about Atlantis for the second hour, I just want to thank everyone in Switzerland, Japan, the United States, and Canada who've donated to keep the to donate to the radio program after I was robbed 2 weeks ago of $1,500. The cost to keep Out of This World Radio on the air is between $1,200 to $1,500 per month, and your contributions are really appreciated. If you go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just and if you go to that website and you go to a donate button, you can donate even a dollar for the program, and those who donate $25 or more will get a free psychic reading. For those who are just tuning in, the robbery happened 2 weeks ago, and I haven't told you about the details, but the robbers went through a company called Money Pack as part of an internet scam. MoneyPack actually knows the identity and whereabouts of the thief, but they will not cooperate with law enforcement, which I find unbelievable. So now I've had to contact the FBI and other organizations for help, and so your donations will be really appreciated. I'd like to introduce our guest today. Shirley, are you there?
Certainly here.
Wonderful, wonderful. You know, I have to tell you, I'm always looking around at different bookstores for new books and new people to bring on the show, on the program. And it was about 3 or 4 months ago, I was in a bookstore and I found your book, Atlantis, Insights from a Lost Civilization. And I picked it up and I just couldn't put it down. I ended up buying it, by the way.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I did buy it. But I mean, I picked it up and you had all these incredible, interesting things about Atlantis, how it got started, the different periods of its evolution. And more interestingly than not, I think you have a lot of very profound things, not only to say about Atlantis, but also perhaps the lessons for humanity. It seems that we've progressed humanity on this planet to a certain point, and then unfortunately, Atlantis ended up either destroying itself or through cataclysmic events. And then people had to start all over again. And so now we are here in the 21st century, and we're facing a lot of problems, as always, but I think we will overcome them, certainly. But I think that an examination of the history of Atlantis certainly may help us provide some guidance for our current times. Just a little bit about your background. Shirley is the author of two classic books on Atlantis and Lemuria. The first one is Lemuria Atlantis, Studying the Past to Survive the Future. And the second one is Atlantis, Insights from a Lost Civilization. She's had a lifetime interest in prehistory and has conducted research both in the United States and at the British Museum Library in London. She's traveled from the islands of the Azores to the ancient monasteries high in the Himalayas to uncover the truth. She combines her passionate interest in Atlantis with her world travels, and she's a very interesting lady. And I just want to tell you, I think you've done a wonderful, wonderful job. How did you get interested in the topic of Atlantis and Lemuria?
Well, I always believed it was there. As a young child, I knew it was there was an island in the Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. Well, my mother finally got out a map, and she showed me it wasn't there. But I was always interested in prehistory. Oh. And as I read, I came to believe that floods, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, comets, and other catastrophes destroyed at least one species, one civilization, and many species of plants and animals.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. It must have been funny when your mom picked up a map and said, well, surely it's not there.
I know, and I sort of learned to stop talking about it, but I never forgot it. And I had six kids, and by the time I got them under control, and then I was I was ready to go.
Oh.
And the more you read, the more you believe. There are hundreds of books about Atlantis, but most of them are like trying to prove it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And my approach was, well, I knew it was there, and I wanted to say what it was like.
Well, I have to ask you, do you feel like you had a past life during that civilization?
Oh, at least one, but I'm not enough of a psychic to be able to tell you. Once I went to someone who was supposed to figure it out, but he didn't really, he didn't recess me or anything, and he thought about it a lot, and he said, well, I think you had two lifetimes, and one of them you were a very good mother and teacher, and the other one you were, like, under the control of black priests and did very bad things. So that doesn't really help too much.
Well, I am a psychic, and I do readings for people as well, and I'm picking up that you've had actually more than just two. You've had many lifetimes in Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
And part of your sole purpose in this lifetime was to educate humanity on the existence of Atlantis, but more than that, to show how we may learn from the past in order so we don't repeat the mistakes of the past, because I think in a lot of ways we're on the precipice of a lot of challenges right now, and I think it's useful to look at to see what happened in the past to humanity in order to learn to become a better place and also a happier people and a better civilization. Where do you think Atlantis was exactly?
Well, I think initially it was a civilization on the North Atlantic Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to prove that it was above the surface until about 10,000 B.C. I mean, there's a Russian geologist who spent a lot of time written a wonderful book about the details. And the Azores and Madeira Island, Cape Verde Island, are the mountaintops. And I went to the Azores, and it's interesting. The sides of the thing, they just go right down like they're mountaintops. There aren't hardly any, there aren't harbors or beaches in the Azores. They're just, you know, those are the mountaintops that are sticking up.
Hmm.
And then I think that it was it's very unstable. It's the most active volcanic area in the world today, even though most of the volcanoes are under the surface. Iceland is part of the Atlantic region. It was where there were intersection of two tectonic plates, and there was a third one in part of it. And that makes for a lot of instability. It wasn't granite. It was like basalt, which comes out of the center of the earth, so to speak. It's not as stable as granite. So it was a great place for civilization because the warm air from the Gulf Stream blew over it. So during even the Ice Age, it wasn't so bad, so cold there. And it was somewhat isolated enough so that there weren't constant invasions by neighboring tribes and so forth, so they could develop a civilization. Mm-hmm. However, by about they traveled. Everybody traveled, and they traveled on the ocean, and they found the Caribbean, of course. And at that time, we'll say 20,000 BC or somewhat before, during the Ice Age, the water in the Atlantic, in all the oceans, was 350 to 400 feet lower than today. Mm. That means the islands were larger. The continental shelves were exposed. It was much easier to travel across the oceans from place to place. And so they started a civilization in the Bahama, on the Bahama Bank, the area that includes Bimini and Andros Islands today. And those, of course, were much, much larger and above the surface. And I think by about 20,000 B.C., for the next 10,000 years, that was probably the main part of Atlantis.
Interesting.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it sure does. One thing that I'm really curious about, you have a lot of fascinating references to what happened after the fall of Atlantis, how it either plunged in the ocean or the continent disintegrated. And a lot of the survivors you mentioned before actually went to, they went several different places, including North Africa, to North America and also the Caribbean as well. Perhaps the Mayans and Inca civilizations are related to the Atlanteans. But one thing interesting that you said, which I found fascinating, Shirley, was that when some of the Atlantean survivors ended up in North America, they actually became or intermarried with the Cherokee, Iroquois, and several other Navajo, I think you mentioned, as Indian tribes. And a lot of the language was preserved as a result of that. And I thought that was just fascinating, which makes sense, too.
You're really talking, too, about substantiating some of the information from DNA tests.
Mm-hmm.
And this is mitochondrial DNA,
right,
which is easier to measure. It's outside the cells, but they can tell how long it's been since they came from another place, another group. And you'll find that in North America, as you mentioned, the Iroquois were 25%. It's called haplogroup X. And they first found it on the far west coast of Ireland. That's pretty close to Atlantis. In Finland and in Spain. But North America, as I say, the Iroquois, the Ojibwe, the Sioux, and the Yakima all had a lot of haplogroup X. And then they found, just recently, a rare subgroup, and that is called U subgroup U6 for haplogroup X, and it is among the Basques, which are in the Canary Islands, the Basques, on the islands between, the mountains between Spain and France, where Atlanteans went. The Basques have written books about that.
Right.
The Berbers in the Atlas Mountains of northern Africa, and the people in some of the people in the Canary Islands.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all. I mean, the DNA is really. I mean, you know, they can't say where it came from. The scientists, they know that it first appeared in North Africa 52,000 years ago, and then another batch came 39,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they just say, well, it must have come from Europe. But obviously, not the answer.
Actually, there's archaeological evidence that in the Sahara, North Africa, there is actually a large, you probably know more about this than I do, but I've heard
The Triton Sea.
The Triton Sea, exactly. It was an inland sea, and a lot of survivors of Atlantis actually went there and lived for thousands of years.
Right. And then when the... it was a bad earthquake. The sea broke up. I mean, the mountains, everything was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people went north and became the Berbers.
Okay.
The Berbers, they're Caucasian. They're white skinned. They don't have the dark skin. They've been intermarried with the Arabs since about the 8th century, but they are definitely different. And also, there's the group in Africa called the Tuaregs, T-U-A-R-E-G-S. And they're the ones with the women are very small, and the men are 6 feet, and they have white skin also. And I think those are other people who once were living around the Triton Sea as Atlanteans.
Interesting.
And these are all, another thing, matrilineal societies, the Iroquois, the Berbers. The Tuaregs, they're all the women running the show.
Interesting. Isn't that fascinating? Would you say that was because Atlantis was a matrilineal society, very spiritually based?
Well, certainly, maybe not for all its long, long existence, but certainly I would say at that time when people left and moved elsewhere.
One thing, and this gets to a question of our current civilization. You know, we fight wars over oil resources now. Countries still use it. I look at oil use as not the greatest energy source, just because it's polluting. And I think there's better energy sources. During the Atlantean times, what kind of energy did they use? By the way, was it crystal?
Oh well, solar was the big thing. I mean, This comes from Edgar Cayce. Do your listeners know?
Oh, I'm sure they know about Edgar Cayce, but go ahead and tell people if you want a little bit about...
Did you want me to talk about him, or you think they...
Oh, go ahead and talk about him a little bit. That's fine.
Well, no, that's okay. When did he live? 1877 to 19-something, 30-something.
45, yeah.
45, thank you. He was able to put himself into a semi-trance and give information, usually medical information, about people who didn't even have to be present.
Mm-hmm.
And those sessions were called readings, and they've all been preserved. And I mean, Virginia Preach is one of my favorite places to go because that's where the library is. It's where he lived and dedicated to him. But anyhow, he just called. He talked a lot about the Great Crystal, which was the way that the Atlanteans got their power from the sun and maybe even the stars, he says.
Interesting. Interesting.
So and he describes it pretty well, how it was made, a tall thing with asbestos and so on and so forth, to the point where I got an email once from some people in Ohio who said they knew scientists who were really trying to develop something, as Casey had described. I don't know if anything ever came from it, but
interesting.
Somehow they were able to focus the rays of the sun, and they used mirrors and so on, like we use mirrors today.
Sure.
But they had a movable dome on the top, so you could regulate how much energy you received.
Fascinating, fascinating. Well, I think those energy sources are still out there, and I think there's certain sectors of society which has already discovered them. But as long as we have the petroleum-based economy, the oil companies in particular will keep us going on the petroleum side of things until every last drop is used. And then they'll say, oh, we just discovered this, even though they may have had it for 300 years.
And then they can make money that way.
And then they can make money on that way. Absolutely. 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 There is a fascinating reference to your in your book, Shirley, in the Atlantis Insights from a Lost Civilization on page 223. In the first paragraph, where it talks about the Mayans had an ancient manuscript called Proof That I Am a Serpent, that one of the survivors of Atlantis had written a book, and it was carefully preserved for many, many centuries, thousands of years. But then when Cortez arrived in Central America in 1519, he destroyed much of their libraries, and I think he destroyed that copy as well. Have you heard anything what may have happened to that book or where a copy may be available today?
No, it sounds, you know, like somebody ought to, but you're the researcher. You ought to be able to find out what happened to it.
Well,
I mean, you know, how about, were there copies or anything?
Well, there were some copies made, and people suspect that it might be, it was taken by the Spanish back in the 16th century, and a copy could have ended up in the Vatican Library. We don't know. We don't know for sure. It's hard to say.
It's hard to say what's in there. I think it's gotten better, but there was a time when nothing was cataloged or organized. You couldn't find things, and so the new librarian started to computerize it, and he was fired. But now I think it's redone. I mean, it's better. I think they're letting the information be organized, but I think there's a lot there.
Interesting. Interesting, interesting. Tell me, how long did the Atlanteans live? Like, we live, if we're lucky, 80, 90 years here on this planet. But during the Atlantean times, did they live significantly longer than we do today?
Some people have written about regeneration using the crystal. They're usually referred to as Cro-Magnons. Which means the men were about 6 feet tall and the women somewhat shorter. And they were very similar to us, high cheekbones. But about how long they lived probably varied with what the civilization was like at the time. I mean, there were periods when it was pretty negative and bad.
And,
you know, drinking and all the rest of it. Whereas other times when they were close to nature, which was where most of the time, and, you know, very positive, contented, maybe then lived longer. But I haven't found anything any records of it.
Sure, sure. For those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside of Seattle in the United States. We have on the line a wonderful researcher, Shirley Andrews. She's written two classic, excellent books on Atlantis and Lemuria. The first one is the book that I read called Atlantis Insights from a Lost Civilization. And her website, you can either go to our show website at outofthisworld1150.com. Just go to Shirley's name on the left side or at the bottom, and you can click on her website. And her website is, for my listening audience, is www.atlantisinsights.net. Insights is plural. Tell us, I don't know very much about Lemuria, but I'm fascinated where that civilization was. And was it close to India in the Indian Ocean?
Oh, no, no. It was also a seafaring civilization in the Pacific Ocean.
I see.
And there are many more positive remains than there are in the Atlantic Ocean, because the Atlantic Ocean has shifting sands in the Caribbean area, mm-hmm. and lava covering most of the Atlantic Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll find there are huge megalithic ruins in the Pacific off the coast of Okinawa. Mm-hmm. If you tell your listeners, go to templeofmu.com, they will see pictures, and they'll see someone scuba diving in there. So it was also a seafaring civilization. Edgar Cayce always placed it off the west coast of South America, where there certainly was land at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And the islands were much, much larger. Easter Island, of course, was part of it, and that's all that's left of that part today.
Mm.
And that's, you know, pretty amazing that those statues all around the island were built. This very small island that can make, you know, it was bigger.
Mm-hmm.
This was another seafaring civilization, mm-hmm. Based on large islands where mm-hmm. megalithic ruins are still there. I mean, there's a lot of them that are just not found or talked about.
Sure.
There's a new one a couple new ones that are being mentioned that people are just dating way back before Atlantis even. Supposedly Lemuria started long before Atlantis, that the people what first came there perhaps were not totally in physical form yet,
mm-hmm.
and gradually they materialized and so on and so forth. And it was around until it also gradually disintegrated, but the very end would be by 10,000 BC, similar to Atlantis, when something big happened on the surface of the Earth.
Sure, sure. I want to tell, I have many listeners in Japan listening to the program now, and I just want to say that there is there has been a History Channel with the documentary on that, where divers have gone down off the coast of Okinawa, and you can see the footage of that. It's incredible to think that those ruins are there. In fact,
there's some off of Japan also. Mm-hmm. There's some off of Taiwan, and off of India. You've heard about those.
No, tell us about that. I would love to hear that.
I mean, those are just, I don't much around the west coast of India, actually.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
But there were civilizations when ocean levels were quite a bit lower then.
Mm-hmm.
So these things were built above mm-hmm. the surface, and then the water has risen as much as 400 feet to cover them.
Wow, fascinating, just fascinating. There's something I have to ask you about. There's a marine biologist named, I believe his name is Dr. Paul Robertson. There have been, he came out with a documentary, it must have been a couple of years ago, where he said that he'd filmed a mermaid off the coast of, I believe it was Iceland in the North Atlantic.
Wow.
And it actually had come up and touched his camera. I've seen the footage. It was quite amazing. It was a woman, long blonde hair. And she looked just like a mermaid. Now,
he's been
ridiculed on the internet for it, but I don't think he's a kook. He's a legitimate academic researcher. This is what he saw.
Mm-hmm.
And at some future point, I'd love to have him on my program. I haven't been able to reach him yet, but I know that from what I've heard, that the Atlanteans did some genetic experiments where they created, they mixed human genes with animal genes to create the creatures which were half human and half animal. And I think you probably know more about this than I do, Shirley, but the whole myth and theory about mermaids came from that. And according to Dr. Robertson's research, mermaids still exist. And they exist in the when Atlantis ended up being destroyed about 10 to 12,000 years ago, some of these sea creatures undoubtedly must have escaped, and they're still, according to Dr. Robertson's research, they're still alive in the ocean somewhere.
Wow, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, which I just find totally incredible. Just incredible.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
incredible. And often, when there's a myth, there's often a factual basis for that, actually, in reality. The other thing, too, is that I've read books by Dolores Cannon, who's a famous psychic, and she's written several books about how the survivors of Atlantis actually ended up in Egypt, and those survivors helped build the pyramids in Egypt, especially Giza.
Edgar Casey says that, you know, the Great Pyramid was built by Atlanteans.
Interesting.
And he has lots and lots of details about that, when it, what how it was and when it went on, and that, you know, underneath it there are records of the Atlantean civilization. And
right.
I think Dolores Cannon's terrific.
Oh, yeah.
I heard her speak last year once.
Oh, fantastic. She did
Great lady.
She did a reading for me once back in 1997. And the interesting thing was is that she took me 100 years into the future.
Oh, wow.
And she took me to the date of 2097. And in 2097, I was on a Pleiadian spacecraft. I was an engineer. I was a flight engineer, about 30 years old, in a light blue uniform. And I was looking out, gazing over planet Earth. I must have been easily 30, 40,000 feet. And the Earth looked absolutely beautiful, but I was an engineer on this spacecraft, which I thought was...
Isn't that wonderful? Something to look forward to.
Well, actually, I have been invited to go up on a craft here soon, and with some benevolent advanced civilization. And when I do, I'm sure it'll be... I'll be sure to tell my listeners it'll be an out-of-this-world experience, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
So
terrific.
Yeah, but one thing I want to get back to you about is the Hall of Records. Now, according to, I remember, was it Casey who said this? I'm trying to remember, maybe Casey said this, that when the Atlantis, when the Atlanteans knew that their civilization was coming to an end, or that, you know, all these cataclysmic changes were occurring, they put three identical sets of records called the Hall of Records at three different locations. The first was in, I'm trying to remember... It was off the Bahamas, off Bimini, in one location.
And then there was one somewhere connected to the Yucatan in a temple.
Correct, correct.
And then, of course, in Egypt.
Right, under the left, what was it, the left or the right? I think it was the
paw of the Sphinx.
Correct, correct.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah.
Well, that's hard. I mean, you know, there's certainly the ARE that Edgar Casey plays. They've spent a lot of time, energy, and so forth on trying to get to those records, but the Egyptian government isn't too cooperative because anything in Egypt has to have started. Egypt.
Right, right, right. Well, one thing I remember that Edgar Casey said is that when humanity has advanced to the point where they're spiritually ready for this information, then they'll be found, not before then. So you could say, we're getting there. I think surely every year that goes past, I think that humanity as a whole is moving into the fifth dimension. Personally, I'm very optimistic for the future. I think eventually we will have a paradise on Earth. I've studied Nostradamus quite a bit, and one of his predictions is that during the 2030s to 2040s, we will have 1,000 years of peace and prosperity on this planet, especially of spiritual growth.
I've heard things like that, and I've also heard that things have to get worse before they get better.
Well,
but I'm not looking forward to that part.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think it's easy. You know, it's like my foster mother, rest her soul, would used to say. She was a wonderful lady, and she would used to say, you can take a glass of water, Ted, and you can either look at it as half empty or half full. And so I always remember that, especially when I'm having a bad day. I try to look at things as half full, but I don't buy into doom and gloom. The purpose of my program, I started this last year, is to help advance in human consciousness and tell people that there is a bright future ahead of us. And I firmly believe there is. Sure, we got problems.
Right.
I mean, what period in history we didn't have problems? One thing, if you talk to the greatest generation of our parents, often they would say, like during the 30s, many people were predicting the world would end. And then they ended up of course, with Hitler in 1939, 1940, and World War II was horrible. But we made it through, and I think we're going to make it through this period, too. I think humankind has always been, it's like tests that we're given, and we've been able to surmount them in the past, and we're going to surmount them during this time
I think
too.
Of the days of the plague and how awful it must have seemed about life here.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
You know, you seem really interested in working towards a better civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot going on in the Internet that is reaching thousands of people all over the world. One of them is a site, globalmeditations.com.
Mm.
Actually, that's run by a sister of mine. But that provides information about upcoming peace marches, prayer ceremonies, drum circles, and so forth. And that also, these sites offer viewers opportunities to join worldwide for group meditations focused on peace and spreading love. And they're really, I think they're pretty powerful. There is an effect.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Back on July 25th, we had a wonderful interview with my friend Dr. Masaru Emoto in Tokyo.
The water guy.
The water guy, yeah. He's a wonderful man. I wanted to say this, and before I forget, that he was taken ill recently while traveling in China, and I want all my listeners around the world to please send him love and light so he feels better. As an intention experiment, I want everyone to visualize holding hands with everyone else, their close family members and close friends, and sending lots of love and light so Dr. Emoto will feel better. He is on the mend, but he's not. I know he hasn't been feeling well, but he does such wonderful work. I'm having a psychic conference actually November 21st through the 23rd, where Dr. Emoto has been scheduled as the keynote speaker on Saturday, November 22nd. I don't know whether he'll be able to make it. I hope he can. I know that he's postponed his trips, but he has a wonderful assistant as well, Michiko. She's doing the work for his organization now. She's a wonderful, wonderful person, a wonderful woman. But their work is basically intention. And I know that when I had Dr. Emoto on the program back on July 25th, I asked him whether his intention experiments would work for having world peace. And so for those who are just tuning in and don't know about Dr. Emoto, he has done experiments where he's taken two glasses of water. And in one glass of water, he has a group of people focus love and energy in the first glass of water. And in the second glass of water, he asked them to focus hate and negative thoughts in the second glass. You take the first glass of water then that it's been exposed to the positive thoughts, and you put that under an electron microscope, and guess what? You have these beautiful water crystals which have all formed. It's like a piece of artwork. You look at the second glass of water where people have been directing negative forms, and it looks terrible. There's nothing, no beautiful water crystals, nothing. And so we did an experiment back on July 25th of this year where we sent love and light to the Palestinians and the Israelis to ask them just to at least give a brief ceasefire so they can get medical supplies to the wounded and maybe some food into some war-torn areas. And that was at 3:30 p.m. Seattle time, Pacific time, on Friday, July 25th. At 8:30 p.m., I got to the place where I was staying, and I turned on CNN. And guess what had happened? The Israelis and the Palestinians had just agreed to have a 12-hour ceasefire beginning at 9 p.m. Seattle time for 12 hours. And I was just so happy about
That's
that.
That's wonderful.
So I want everyone around the world to please send your love and light to Dr. Emoto for his continued well-being and for him to feel better. I know that your good thoughts will help him. And he's doing wonderful work. But thank you.
Well, he's a good friend of my sister's.
Really?
The one I told you does globalmeditations.com.
Oh, wonderful.
I will certainly tell her she may know about all this, but on her program, on her website, and she sends at least weekly emails out to thousands of people.
Oh,
things
nice.
Going on that I'll have her add, praying for her.
Oh, that'd be nice. And if you like, pray for my program too.
And
the
return. Okay.
The return of the money that was stolen from me 2 weeks ago would be great.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Yeah, that would be great. I have to ask you, what do you think the messages, the spiritual or karmic lessons from the the destruction of both Lemuria and Atlantis. What kind of lessons can we learn from their experience to our own civilization now, Shirley?
Well, I think you can see pretty easily that the civilizations actually sort of disintegrated as people became less. I'm trying to think of some of the words. Plato wrote a lot about Atlantis.
He did.
He describes it very well.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I gotta think a moment about that one. But mostly that the civilizations were really people who were just ill-intentioned. They stopped religion. Everything was like really, really bad. Negative energy, just overwhelming. Plato said, "The portion of divinity in them became weak, and they lost their comeliness through being unable to bear the burden of their possessions, and grew ugly to look upon in the eyes of him who has the gift of sight."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, really, in many ways, I think the people were responsible for it. Casey says, thoughts are deeds. And these thoughts, these bad thoughts and actions traveled and caused through the cosmos and caused natural disasters.
Well,
I'm sort of wondering here, not remembering exactly what you were asking.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to throw you a curveball.
That's all right.
But I
mean, they lost respect for nature and for caring for it.
Sure.
They devoted their lives to eating, drinking, entertaining themselves, ornamenting their bodies.
Well, I hate to say this, but you can see some of those trends. I think things are turning around in around the world worldwide. But if you can certainly. What else can you say about some, I'm not going to mention anyone on air, but some corporations and government entities which don't have any respect for nature? For as one example, there's a new program out by the U.S. Navy that's been sanctioned by Obama that is supposed to kill 12 million whales and dolphins in the next 5 years.
Oh, that's terrible. Why?
Well,
I mean, I know what they do, explosions areas where there are these... where birthing is happening for the whales, and
right,
the babies can't find their mothers and so on and so forth. But how are they, what's going on? Why do they want to kill what's in the ocean?
The ostensible reason given by the Navy and the Obama administration for their plan to blow the brains up of 12 million whales and dolphins, and I'm not joking, this is fact, you can look it up on the internet if you like, is that they're testing these new sonar things for their nuclear submarines for national defense. Well, you can put anything under national defense. I mean, there must be a better way. And there is a lawsuit now in the U.S. District Court in Hawaii that's been filed by the Natural Resources Defense Council. They would appreciate your support for this lawsuit. But I find it incredible that this is going on. And again, this is getting into another topic. But in the major media, you don't find much about it. Almost nothing. And people are shocked this is going on, and it's happening right now. Personally, I think that they're targeting these beautiful whales and dolphins for two reasons. The first is that the ultimate goal of their sonar system is not so much to kill off the whales, although they look at it as kind of a byproduct, but actually to kill off humans. And since whales and dolphins are much like our mammals, basically mammals underwater, they're the perfect guinea pigs for testing a sonar system that they can use to kill these things, kill these beautiful creatures off. And after that, we're next. After that, too, if 12 million whales and dolphins are gone from the planet Earth, what kind of vibration will this planet have? I think that whales and dolphins raise the vibration of this planet in a wonderful spiritual way, and they're essential to our spiritual development. If you get rid of them, well, I think we're going to be impeded in our destiny to become a truly happy civilization, which I'm looking forward to in the 2030s and the 2040s.
Wow, it sounds terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is. If you go to my website, many listeners at www.outofthisworld1150.com, and go down to Patricia Corey, Cori, to her interview at the bottom of the page. You can listen to the interview we had upon this a couple of months ago. And what you mentioned before about negative energy and stopping religion. I do believe in a higher spiritual authority. I do believe in a prime creator, in God, if you will. And I think that that there are higher spiritual forces out there, and I think it's important to keep that in mind through your daily lives, that there are good forces out there that are willing to help you, and not to get too negative, because I think our future is very bright. So we don't repeat the things that that happened to Atlantis. My dear foster mother used to say that thoughts are things, and I remember you said that Casey said that thoughts are deeds. Well, thoughts are things. In the fifth dimension, which takes precedence over our third dimension existence here, that you have to be very careful what you say, feel, and think. One thing that I've done for the last 20 years while my foster mother was alive is that she gave me a life review every day, multiple times during the day, where not only would I examine my actions and what I said, felt, and thought, but also how that affected other people around me and the world. So that and it helped me spiritual grow. I've advanced 16 spiritual lifetimes now, or a total of almost 1,500 Earth years. And now I can do remote viewing. I can see into the future. I can do readings. I can read other people's minds. But it's come through a lot of hard work and paying attention. But that's why I started this radio program, to raise consciousness and to let people know that there's a very bright future. And your work, I have to tell you, you've written some of the most interesting books I've ever read about Atlantis, and especially Lemuria. One thing
I love your positive attitude. It's just wonderful.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you.
It makes all the difference. Makes me feel better.
Well, good. Well, I want to let my men and listeners know that for those who've just tuned in, you're listening to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here on 1150 AM in Bellevue, beautiful Bellevue, Washington, right across the Lake Washington from Seattle, Washington, here in the United States. We have on the phone Shirley Andrews. She's written some absolutely fascinating books about Atlantis. One of the things that people have been puzzled, Shirley, about how the Atlanteans, the survivors of Atlantis, and the Egyptians actually built the pyramids in Egypt. Now, I was in Egypt about 14, 15 years ago, and I was just astounded on how beautiful they were and how massive they were. But Casey said that the survivors of Atlantis, and with the help of the Egyptians, they would focus around a rock, for example, and with their pure mental energy, move the rock into place to create these pyramids. Have you read much about that, or how they did those?
Have you read about the monks, or whatever they are, in I think they're in India, who stand around a stone and can make it rise a little bit?
Oh, the sadhus.
I think in the case of most situations that some sound is involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the sound, the vibrations of the sound somehow can match the stone or whatever you're trying to move. I mean, there's no way all these things, the stones that could have been transported from far away to build things, buildings or megalithic buildings that still exist, and they could test them, and they said the stone didn't come from here.
Sure.
And even the pyramids, I think the stones came, and they said, well, maybe they came up the river, and that might be, but still.
Sure.
I agree. I think it's the power of thought plus sound somehow.
Well, during my last hour, I don't know if you're able to listen, but during my last hour, I had Wolf Dieter Stroll on from Germany. He's one of Europe's most famous ethnobotanists and plant spiritualists. And he spent some time with the Cheyenne medicine, Native American medicine men here in the United States. And the medicine people there with this tribe use both plants and also singing to help people heal. And
plants and what else?
Plants and singing.
Singing. Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
And the plants on a spiritual level teach the medicine people how to sing to someone who's ill to make them feel better, and also to amplify the effect of the plants. So, you know, if we were able to get in a time machine today, Shirley, and go in maybe perhaps 100 years from now, instead of heavy lifting equipment at a construction site, we may see a construction crew of 20 or 30 people standing around and singing to a to a piece of steel to move it into place to build a house, to build a building. Wouldn't that be interesting? And of course,
yeah, we could even tackle bigger things.
We could tackle bigger.
What about the man in Florida who's built a castle by himself on a huge rock?
That's right. I don't remember. I've certainly heard about him, and he's been on Coast to Coast before. I don't remember his name, but he has built what's called a coral castle, friends, and people can't scratch their heads and said, how could he ever do that? But I think he did it probably with the power of his mind and perhaps singing as well, like the Egyptians apparently did it, and the native medicine people with the Cheyenne tribe did with plants. So there's a lot of we're going into an area that's just fascinating, and it's fascinating because we're leaving the third dimension. Once you enter in, according to the Pleiadians and the Andromedans, we actually have 12 different dimensions of existence. We're in the third dimension, but once you reach the fifth dimension, there's only truth. And a good psychic can go into the fifth dimension and answer questions about anything you want. Apparently, there's no time. The time's in the fourth dimension, but once you go beyond that to the fifth dimension, everything past, present, and future happens at once.
And anything that's happened before will happen again.
Interesting. History repeats itself. And there's a famous quote by Lord Acton out of England, and he said, I think in the 19th century, that those who fail to learn the lessons of history are doomed to repeat them, which I thought was just fascinating, So yeah. I've always been a big history buff, and one thing I want to ask you, you know, we could go on for hours on this program, but one of the things you talked about were the temples in Atlantis. And there were three different levels, I guess, of initiates, of people who would become a temple priest. And the highest level took something like 20 years of study. Is that, I'm trying to remember.
Oh, yeah, that's in my book. Right.
Right. Right.
There were three levels that they went through.
Right.
Increasing their knowledge. But as a result, they were extremely knowledgeable. I mean, and powerful minds.
Now, toward the end, they knew what was coming, I guess, and so then they put records of their existence in those three different places. And I hope someday soon they will be found. And I think that they will be, as Edgar Cayce predicted. And what an amazing peek into past history that will be for humanity.
Oh yeah, right.
You know.
And you know, it would be something to learn from, goals to aim for, and so much.
Oh, absolutely. I think that we've been around this block before with all these different technological and pollution challenges here on the planet, and but we're gonna make it through. And I think that if you go to, for example, Mars, I think Mars at one time was inhabited. There's pyramids there, I guess, from what I've heard, read about. I think the moon certainly was inhabited in the past, on the dark side of the moon.
You don't think that's being used now?
That was my next point. From what I've heard and read, I've heard that there's 25,000 people from this country on Mars that are there. I think that I don't know how many people there are on the moon, but I've heard that there's a covert space program that brings people up there, kind of like a breakaway civilization that's up there. You know, it's incredible when you think about it. I don't know why they just don't open up and tell us about it.
Oh, there's so much NASA doesn't tell us.
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the problems with NASA, as it is with some other government agencies, is that after World War II, we brought between 5,000 to 10,000 Nazis to this country as part of Operation Paperclip, and a lot of them went into the military-industrial complex and our CIA, and I think they couldn't be helped, but a lot of them brought their ideology with them, and that ideology is conflicts with democracy, frankly, and that's why we have so much secrecy nowadays.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, and
because those were minds, scholarly people who could contribute a lot.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. But like Atlantis, in the last days of Atlantis, if you're negatively based, and you've taken higher spiritual forces out of everything, what are you left with? Not much. You're left with a draconian civilization that's only accentuates the negative. But I think things are turning around, and again, I think that things will eventually turn around in a good way for us. Back in August, you may want to look this up at www.outofthisworld1150.com. It was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I had Laura Eisenhower on the program. And Laura Eisenhower is the granddaughter of Dwight D. Eisenhower, and she gave a very interesting interview about how her grandfather had signed this agreement with a group of creepy reptilian aliens who were thousands of years ahead of us. And the reptilians approached Eisenhower and said, look, we've got this technology, we'd like to share it with you, but we'd like to study and abduct humans. And Eisenhower, I think, was reluctant at the time, but he was blackmailed into signing it because the reptilians told Eisenhower that if he didn't sign the agreement, that they would go to the Russians and make the Soviet Union the preeminent technological power on the planet. Little did Eisenhower know, though, that at the same time they were here interviewing or visiting him, they were over in Moscow interviewing Khrushchev, and they were also offering him the same deal. Well, it's been 60 years since that time, and I think the reptilians have influenced our government and corporations in all kinds of ways, which aren't good for us. They're a very negative-based alien civilization, and they actually look at humans as a food source. Anyway, we'll be having a program on ETs and UFOs 1 week from today with Dr. Michael Sella from Hawaii and Scott Lemriel, the author of the Sayres Agenda. So that's
because there's so much there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting. What is Laura Eisenhower? I mean, has she written anything, or is she?
I believe she's written quite a bit. If you go to go to the radio website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And you go down to the bottom of the page and you just simply look up Laura Eisenhower, look up her name, you click on her name, you can go to the audio and you can listen to the wonderful, interesting, fascinating interview that she made, she gave. And also, too, there's a link to her website, so you can look to see what she's written. There's so much going on. But I think there is galactic help on the way for us. There's two main alien groups which visit this planet in this dimension. The first is called the Galactic Alliance. They're here.
They're also circling above us and so forth.
they comprise 435 million planets, about 7 trillion individuals.
Wow.
They care about us deeply. They are tens of thousands, in some cases hundreds of thousands of years ahead of us, still technologically and spiritually. And they're here to help us. And they are helping us out. The other side of the coin are the reptilians. They've been in agreement, secret agreement with our government and the Russian government for the last 60 years. And look what a mess our planet is. These reptilians, they feed off negativity. They want wars. They want us to destroy ourselves so they can have the planet as for their own. But anyway, I'm not going to go into. I mean, that's a whole other program. But I just want to tell my many listeners around the world for thank you so much for listening. We've got a little over 2 minutes left, and 1 week from today, we'll be having Dr. Michael Sella from the Big Island of Hawaii on the program. He's one of the world's most famous UFO researchers, as well as Scott Lemriel, who's had face-to-face contact with benevolent ETs for over 50 years. And they will have I promise you, this will be an out-of-this-world program. And Shirley, for the last minute, I want to give you the floor, and I'd love for you to wrap it up.
Oh, dear. Well, I guess I'll urge people to read my books. Look at my website's good. And take lessons from the Atlanteans about how to save our civilization and how to make it a better place.
And I
wasn't prepared for that one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Well,
you're a wonderful author. You've written some wonderful books. Your website is www.atlantisinsights.net. And if you'd like to listen to this this show on the recording, just go to my website. And I just want to thank everyone for listening today. And with your help, we will make this planet a much better place to live. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and take care. Thank you, Shirley, for being on the show.